Hello, kids. Bat Segundo here, and I'm feeling a bit unfeeling. You see, I've signed up for this program that suggests not expressing emotion is the new way for a new spiritual path. And I can do this without abandoning tequila. So far, I've seen no spiritual path, not even a Buddha-like fork in a road, and I... Oh, to hell with this! Pettifoggers for suggesting that enlightenment can be found by abandoning your emotions. I don't know what I was thinking. She was cute, but it wasn't worth that. Next thing you know, I'll be passing out leaflets in the street. Let there be a lesson here. Feelings are your best friend. It was feelings, perhaps, that caused our young roving correspondent to attend a mystery convention called VoucherCon, operating on very little sleep. In fact, it's quite possible none at all. He attempted to make sense of this annual gathering of mystery enthusiasts. Judge for yourself whether this moonlighter made any headway.
So I am here with one of the Goldberg brothers.
Young, better-looking Goldberg brother.
A young, better-looking, which is Todd, right?
No, it's not Todd.
You're Todd. Oh, Lee. Lee!
I'm the Pierce Brosnan impersonator. He's the, Jackie Gleason impersonator, John Lovitz.
Okay, so let's go ahead and get this straight so that everyone can understand. What makes you, Lee Goldberg, how do we distinguish you from Todd Goldberg? How do we distinguish the Goldbergs at all? Is there a special birthmark? Is there a special tattoo? Or
there's about an 80-pound difference. And I only have one chin. No, actually, the difference between
me... He charges 80 pounds more than you to go to bed.
The difference between Todd and I is he writes serious literary fiction, and I write mass market crap. So that's the real yardstick.
Is it going to be, do you plan on continuing to write mass market crap?
Or? Absolutely, because I make money and he doesn't. That's the critical difference.
Does Todd actually come to you because he doesn't make money? Or?
No, I joke. Actually, Todd did very well. His first book sold to Miramax for $1 million.
I thought it was $2 million.
He's selling $2 million now. The thing about the Goldbergs is we all exaggerate.
So there's really no way to figure this out unless we actually drag out the books, which, of course, are, really huge and large and rather heavy.
Like the authors who wrote them.
Aha! Okay. Well, you're the first person I've talked to, and I've never been to a VoucherCon before. How am I supposed to sort of, how does one prepare for such an experience? What does one do here?
Well, what I do is I just walk around, meet authors I've always admired, chat with them, talk with fans, buy lots of books I don't need and don't have room for and shouldn't be buying. I really have a wonderful time, but I've been to so many of these things that I don't attend that many panels because I've heard most of the authors tell all their stories 10 times over. So I spend most of my time in the book room, outside the book room, in the bar, in the hallways, just talking to people, and I love it. I get a huge kick out of it.
So basically, you have 5 minutes of stories that I shouldn't be talking with you anymore. You have a limit too.
I've just used up all my stories.
Damn it. Come on, Lee. More invention here. You're a writer.
Well, you have to ask me a question. Ask me a question no one's ever asked me before. Or better yet, ask me a question I've been asked a million times, and then I can give you my canned anecdote that goes along with it.
Okay, well, how many places can you actually remember pi to?
Pi? Well, I know the entire Marie Callender's menu. That's about it. That's it. All the pies I know.
Okay. But that's still, you haven't specified a number.
Of pies?
Yeah, number of pies.
How many pies? You're actually talking about a mathematical equation. I can't add. I know pi is a mathematical concept, isn't it?
Maybe.
Isn't that what you were talking about? We're trying to be highfalutin and ask me a mathematical question?
Or yeah.
You're actually asking me about pi?
Well, I'm trying to ask you a mathematical question because I'm trying to figure out this whole, two Goldbergs thing, which, is there one or is there two?
There's only one who counts and the other is sort of, a tag-along.
Well, why isn't Todd here?
Couldn't afford it. No. Todd actually has Todd's now a professor of creative writing at UC Riverside, and he has classes to teach and students who expect him to be in the classroom when they show up. So he has commitments that prevent him from being here. Plus, he doesn't have a new book out, and that also, it's hard to justify to the wife and family schlepping to Madison, Wisconsin if you don't have a book out.
But on the flip side, you can mock him for it as a brother.
That's true. Yes, the other thing you do at BoucherCon, if you're an author, it's wonderful because your publisher is here and booksellers are here, so you get a lot of actual business done. And then you have things like what just happened to me while I was talking to you, Bob Levinson stepping on my toe and trying to lift my wallet at the same time.
Yes.
Keep your hands out of my pockets, Bob Levinson.
Okay, we're going to have talk with him. Bob Levinson, we understood that you actually stepped on Lee Goldberg's toe. Can you please explain yourself?
I thought it was Todd Goldberg.
Really, there seems to be a prejudice against Todd Goldberg here that I'm detecting.
No, it's a contest which you probably haven't heard about. There is a day and a time that has been put in a vault, and it reflects the correct day and time for somebody who steps on Todd Goldberg's toe. The prize is a signed copy of Alexa Sokolov's new book.
Now, here's the question.
It's called The Harrowing Todd Goldberg.
Are you in on this?
Well, I want in on the $4 million movie deal is what I want, yes. But I donated my book, yes.
But I know that Lee, in all modesty, was telling you that Todd is not only his younger brother, but the less talented. This is not true. I have known Lee Goldberg for 20-something years.
I'm far less talented than Todd.
And he is the more talented brother. He is also the more social brother. Witness the fact that he's here and Todd is off somewhere writing a screenplay that will sell for $2 million.
So basically the gist is that Lee is the lazier brother, perhaps.
No. In fact, it's amazing to see Lee standing here not writing something, because he's notorious in the business for writing at least 26 hours a day. He has 9 blogs, which is amazing. He has 4,226 friends on my friends.
MySpace, yeah.
MySpace.
You're so with it, Bob. MySpace.
Yeah, MySpace. Let's get the terminology.
The Beatles have broken up, Bob. What? Gilligan's Island has been canceled. James Arness, all right, he's still alive, but Gunsmoke is over.
No, James Arness is dead.
We have this new thing also. No. Cable television.
James is dead.
Actually,
you should get with the program, TiVo. I have TiVo.
No, wait. Poor Judd is dead.
Who?
Say, tell him.
Who's poor Judd?
Oklahoma. Rod Steiger's character from the movie.
What does that have to do with James Arness and Gunsmoke?
It's a song title.
What do they have to do with the Beatles?
Everything starts with the Beatles.
You see, I'm totally confused here. What does any of this have to do with mysteries here?
You put a bunch of intelligent people together and they know nothing.
Okay.
What can I tell you about the Beatles? I love them. I knew them.
I should have mentioned the Beatles. Bob knew them.
Yes.
Okay. He used to arrange hookers for them and drugs. You didn't know that?
Yeah, I read that big mammoth biography by Little Brown. Bob was like had half the book.
Joking aside, Bob was very big in the music business. Anyone who got stoned or laid in the 60s, Bob was responsible for.
Anybody I was ever involved with is either in the Hall of Fame or dead, or both.
Uh-huh.
You don't believe that, do you? But ask Sarah. Sarah knows.
About what?
Just say yes.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Sure.
This has been like, okay, I'm now thoroughly confused, but thank you all for...
Hey, yeah. Anytime.
Trailers for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets, ain't got no.
All right, so I'm here with John Jordan, the self-proclaimed king of Crime Spree magazine, king of all media. Well, what makes you the king, sir? What is Crime Spree? Tell us all about it.
It's a magazine for and about mystery, the entertainment weekly of the mystery genre.
Really easy to read and like fun, snarky kind of.
Read and snarky. We basically do what we want, and as long as the readers keep happy, we keep doing it.
How long has Crime Spree been around?
2.5 years.
And have there been any sort of evolution or changes throughout the 2.5 years?
Every issue, bigger, better. We've added DVD reviews, comic book reviews, and it's still about books, but not so heavy on the reviews. More about the authors and what they're doing.
So, what authors has Crime Spree, you know, can you be particularly proud of in terms of stories?
We just did a major cover story on Greg Rucka and all the comic book work he's doing, the three novels a year he's doing, and basically the fact that he doesn't sleep and does nothing but write. We've had a cover story from Vicki Hendrix about skydiving. And, I mean, we're just trying to spotlight authors who are new and upcoming and we think underappreciated.
So I'm getting the sense that Crime Spree actually exploits some of these writers who work themselves and do nothing but write.
If it benefits us in any way, we do. If we can get something out of it, we will.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Jim.
No problem.
Well, that's all what I'll add. Think law, call it. Et palamande, fuck law, batle.
I'm here with Jennifer Jordan, who is fondling my Cabinet of Dr. Caligari t-shirt. Jennifer, how... And my man, these aren't too... These aren't... A little bit, but not too much, you know. They're going to be very, very good man boobs, like, you know, 30 years from now.
I mean, they'll be... As long as you keep working on it, developing it, eat a lot of pork products, you'll be fine.
Okay. Well, Jennifer, okay, well, tell me about some of the sort of books that you've authored, or are you an imposter? Have you not offered any...
I am an imposter, that is for sure, very definitely. And an aspiring imposter, too, which is really quite difficult to achieve. But I actually have a
short story in a book that's published,
so therefore I'm technically published. And I'm putting two anthologies together, one of which is near the point where it's going to be published, called, well, originally it was called Fuck Noir. But for some reason, people don't find that a very saleable title.
I do. I'd buy a book like that.
People at Walmart, not so much. So we're going to be calling it Expletive Deleted. And yes, we went with Sarah's suggestion, and we've got a fantastic lineup of people. And everyone always says that, we've got a fantastic lineup of people. Well, we actually do. Everyone from Charlie Houston to David Bowker to Libby Fisher-Hellman, Ken Bruin and Jason Starr, of course. I love Ken's, called Spit. You can't do better than that title. And then Otis 12's story, which starts off rather rudely. It's about fluffers.
Oh, nice.
Yes, indeed.
How do you find a sort of mystery angle to fluffers?
There was definitely a mystery element, but I told people, if you want to just take fuck, really, the theme is fuck, and fuck is like the word dude, the annotation changes the word. Anything that can be fucked up or fucked with or just fucked can be written about in this book. And so it's everything from darkly humorous, and Anthony Neal Smith's actually made me wince, it was so offensive, and that is not easy to do, to hilarious, to brutal, where you end up putting it down after you're done reading the story and you're left in awe about how horrific things can be.
But does shock value kind of take away from the power of narrative here? Or?
In Anthony Neal Smith, definitely, and that's the power of his work. That's why his work is so good.
No, but what I'm suggesting here is, like, we were talking about the original title, Fuck Noir, being rejected by Walmart, and also, you know, having a sort of explicit hook. Do you think this is going to maybe take away from the narrative or the narrative thrust of some of these stories?
So, because each story stands on its own, and each story sets the other stories, they're also vastly different from each other, that I don't think that you would, no one got mired down with that as a theme. It's certainly easy as human beings in the world today to think of a lot of very fucked up situations, some that are absolutely horrible and just make you want to cry, some that'll make you angry, and all of that is covered. So even though there's definitely some fun stuff going on as far as playing with the word, I think it's, as opposed to shock value, maybe a few sentences, but overall I think these are some of the most solid stories I've read, and some of them a little graphic, possibly. Charlie Houston's, his is about a guy who goes on a serial killing spree with a sex doll.
Okay, so one last question. Which story drops the F-bomb the most times? Do you have a word count?
I have to answer. Kevin Wignall wrote one that didn't even use it. Brilliant. As far as the most times, that's Charlie Houston. He won hands down. It's not like he smattered it in every other word. It's not exactly peppered with fuck, although I like that phrase a lot. I think I'm going to have to use
peppered
that.
With fuck.
Peppered with fuck. David Simon, I actually got a copy of the script that he wrote for the first season of The Wire. And a lot of people would know this if they watched The Wire. There's a scene where they go into a previous homicide scene, and instead of using any other word, the only word used in the entire scene is fuck. That's the only word. And they managed to convey everything they need to convey about this entire crime spree to crime scene to each other with just the word fuck. And David said that he rewrote it for me with the actual words they used in the scene. So he said there's actually more fuck in this version of the screenplay. So he wanted me to put a sticker on the cover that says, now with more extra added fuck. And I said I'd do what I could.
Is there any sort of fuckity-fuck or fuck-a-duck or bug-fuck?
No one got silly with fuck. Everyone took fuck pretty seriously once they were past the college humor.
What about like sen-fucking-sational or, you know, spick-fucking-tacular?
I've done a website and I did a history of the word fuck and all the variations of the word fuck that I knew, and people are sending me new variations all the time. So that's on the website. As far as Mark Billingham did the introduction, he covered a little bit of the different versions of fuck and basically told of his admiration for the word and that really should be used more often, and I agree with him.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I understand the lure of press.
Between contracts.
Well, not only that.
Yeah, beer or press? This is the big sort of question
right.
here.
Hold on. Ed, this is Maggie Topkus at Felony and Mayhem Press, which is an independent press based out of New York.
Okay.
You really should talk to her.
Okay. Well, I could talk to whoever. who would like to talk first, or who can talk right now?
Well, just a...
What would you like to talk about?
Well, tell us about your press.
Sure. We launched about 15 months ago. We have about 50 titles in print. Our big title last year was Death in the Garden by Elizabeth Ironside. What we didn't know when we signed the book up was that Elizabeth Ironside is, in fact, the wife of the British ambassador to the United States. So we did the launch party at the British Embassy, and boy, was that surreal. Anyway, we've been lucky enough to get a ton of press on that book, and we've done extremely well with it. And we're here launching the second book by Ms. Ironside. Tomorrow night at a cocktail party, we will be launching The Accomplice. You're welcome to come. Room 638 at the Concourse Hotel.
Oh, wow. I'm getting a hotel room number already. Wow.
Our initial mission was that we were going to reissue the best in crime and mystery fiction that had gone out of print. In fact, in the year and a third that we've been in business, we've expanded that a bit. We are doing some first U.S. editions, as in the case of The Ironsides, which had come out in the U.K. but never been published here. We're also doing a fair number of first paperback editions. For example, we do the paperback editions of Tony Broadbent's Smoke series that came out in hardcover from St. Martin's. And also we are doing the first U.S. paperbacks of Barbara Nadel's Istanbul series.
How many years did it take for you to sort of really kind of find your momentum as a sort of, you know, emerging independent press? I mean, you've been around for 15 years.
No. 15 months.
15 months. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
We launched June 29, 2005.
Oh. Okay.
I've owned a mystery bookstore in New York City for about 12 and a half years, and that was definitely the driving force behind this.
Okay. Gotcha.
But finding our momentum...
We're still in the process
here. I'm still
looking
for it, baby.
Okay. Just keep giving those hotel room numbers out. Thanks so much. Okay. So I'm here with James R. Winter, who has many books in his hand, and I actually stopped him. I prevented him from getting a beer, which...
What does it say?
What's that?
Yeah. Well, I prevented you from getting a beer. What books are you hawking here? What's going on?
What books? Actually, one of these is a Laura Lippman I owe somebody as a bribe for revising a project I worked on.
Uh-huh.
It's... Yeah, I'm finding if you have a lot of writer friends, you can get more free revisions than just about anything. Hey, do you want a signed copy of this?
Ah, so basically you were attending BoucherCon to basically get people to revise other texts. That's your motivation?
Actually, this is the first year where I'm just spectating. With having a book out the last couple of years, I ended up on panels despite my best efforts. And this year I said, well, I'm between contracts, I'm out of print, I just want to hang out and actually watch for once.
How many deals in terms of revisions or editing have you managed to sort of coax or persuade people? I mean, I just actually somehow persuaded or at least deferred this beer situation here. Yeah. Did that get in the way of your plans? Or?
No, it's usually there's one or two people that I use to look at my work, and they usually come back and say, if you get me a signed Victor Gishler, I got one friend of mine is just really huge Gishler fan, or a signed Laura Lippman, or I haven't had anybody ask for Ken Bruin yet, although that's probably the easiest one for me to get. And I'm like, okay. And what I don't tell them is, yes, I have to go out and buy these books, I just don't hand them to me, but at the same time, it's cheaper than paying editing fees.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Jim.
Thank you.
On the way home from the party, neither of us said a word. Rhymes on the car stereo, sang that song you know I hate, the one about the blackbird in the rain.
Okay, so
you're just carrying this around for kids?
There's a gentleman. There's a gentleman from the UK here named Russell McLean, and I don't know what he does or who he is, but he had a very charming brogue. So Russell, tell us about yourself.
Essentially, I run a website, Crime Scene Scotland, which does short stories and crime fiction and things like that. And I pretend to write at other times as well, short stories and Alfred Hitchcocks and things. So, you know, and the rest of the time I try and ride in the coattails of other writers.
You pretend to write. How is that different from writing?
I have no talent, but people seem to accept it sometimes. You know, people have paid me money.
Okay, got you. How long has this site been in operation?
Sorry?
How long has this site been in operation?
It's been about 3 years now, and it 3, maybe 4 years even. And it started out almost as a joke, really. I was trying to open a bookshop, failed miserably. Had a website called Crime Scene Scotland, the space. Thought I'll put up a few stories of my mates on there and see what happens. Take it down after a year, and suddenly people start sending us stuff, and it's taken off.
Have you thought of expanding and doing like Crime Scene France, just like Akashek and their little series? You could do the Crime Scene Bahamas, or
we're international. We just happen to be called Crime Scene Scotland, so which is a good thing. We'll take submissions. We'll take books from anywhere, with one basic rule: no murders in libraries or country houses or little grey-haired lady detectives unless they're incredibly violent or hooked on drugs.
So have you had a grey-haired lady who was hooked on drugs?
Not yet, but if somebody wants to send us one, well, not literally send us one.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and see if we can get a grey-haired lady on drugs for...
Yeah, that's the story we want.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Russ.
Thank you. When you're getting on, sat by the fireside.
So, I am here with Sandy Loper Herzog, who I've been informed is a very key person to talk to. Maybe you could tell us something about yourself, Sandy.
I'm just a reader that lives in Northwest Arkansas now, but I've lived all over the country, and this is my sixth VoucherCon.
Six VoucherCons. What have you learned over the years? What makes this VoucherCon different from perhaps the other five?
It's in Madison, Wisconsin.
Well, aside from the location.
There's new authors that I haven't met here that and just seeing other authors that I've met over the years and just renewing them again, renewing friendships, and seeing folks, other avid readers and reviewers that we see once a year and get together and talk about the new books that we've read over the past years.
Okay. Have you, do you just stick to reading or?
Do you mean as my occupation?
Yeah, I mean, what I mean to say is have you harbored any sort of, like, you know, thoughts about writing mysteries, or are you just strictly
reading? I could never become a writer. I know that my talents lie in the shopping side of buying books, and I'm probably the author's biggest fan because I love to shop, and going into bookstores and finding the new book that some of my favorite authors have written. is my biggest thrill. And there has to be people that know that they don't have any ability in writing. I mean, if we could all write like some of these great authors can, that wouldn't be any excitement, you know. I know that I can't write that, but I know how to, that I like to read, and then I know when I'm reading a good book. So that's what I do. I enjoy reading.
Do you go to any other things besides BoucherCon?
Yeah, I go to, I usually try to attend Mayhem in the Midlands, that's in Omaha, and I have attended, there's one in Muncie, Indiana, I went to once, and I'm blocking what that one's called, but I only attended it once.
There's one in Muncie, that's impressive.
It's Magna Cum Murder. And cum was in there.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's probably why we forgot.
that's probably why I remember.
I don't think I'm going to meet another person who has attended six BoucherCons.
Oh, she will. There's people that have attended a lot of BoucherCons. Yeah.
What's the record? How many BoucherCons have there been? I don't know.
Oh, there's it started in the 70s.
Yeah,
so.
There's got to be 30 plus.
I think this is 38th. This is 37th or 38th. So there's people here that attend a lot more than I have. So.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Ricky, don't lose that number. You don't want to call nobody else. Send it off in a letter to yourself. Ricky, don't lose that number.
Okay, so I am here, and this is going to be a really, really careful interview with Stephen Stillwell, who is the man who has been to the second most BoucherCons.
Consecutive BoucherCons. Consecutive BoucherCons, except for Otto.
Okay, so how many has that? How many is that exactly?
My 28th BoucherCon, my 27th in a row.
What tips can you offer to someone like me? This is the first BoucherCon I've been to.
Hang out in the bar.
It's all about the bar, then?
It's all about the bar.
What has has you come close to not actually attending a BoucherCon? You'll come, like, you know, rain or shine, sick or well?
Yes. I mean, I'm waffling on Alaska, but only because flying has become the ninth circle of hell.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't have to fly here, so...
Well, how would you describe BoucherCon in a nutshell? Or in if not a nutshell, then perhaps a considerable jar of nuts.
It's a great social occasion. It's not about marketing. It's about friendships.
Okay.
If you look at it as about marketing, you're doing it wrong.
So, gotcha. The laconic Stephen Stillwell. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, I am here with Dwayne Skwierzynski, who has many accomplishments up his belt, but he, on his belt, as opposed to up his belt, I'm so sorry. Why don't you just tell us about this?
Let's see, I'm the author of the book called The Wheelman, and a book called The Blonde, which is out in November, and I edited an anthology called Damn Near Dead of a senior citizen noir, of which Sarah has a nice story in there as well. So, otherwise, I'm just a hard-working Polish kid from Philadelphia.
I noticed that your hair is blonde. Was this an inspiration for The Blonde?
No.
Not stare at yourself in the mirror and say, hey, that's a great story.
It's embarrassing. I'm married to a redhead, so it's very awkward, you know, to write a book called The Blonde because, you know, there's trouble there with that.
Well, how did The Blonde come about?
The Blonde, you know, I always like those Cornell Woolrich books where it's like an innocent guy is in trouble and all night for the night he's running from forces who want to harm him or, you know, kill him or something. And I want to do a version of that, so I have this character, this blonde character who's a femme fatale, and, you know, she haunts this poor guy all night long, and poisons his drink in an airport lounge, and it gets worse from there, so it was just fun.
And how do you juggle all these various duties? It seems like you have your pans and many sort of hats, whatever the phrase is.
You know, a lot of heroin, you know, that helps a lot. No, I'm kidding. I usually write at night, you know, like most people who, you know, have a day job. They do their their other work at night. I'm blessed with a wife who goes to bed by 9:30. My kids are in bed by 8, so I do have free time to do that so far.
The trick is marrying someone who actually goes to bed early.
Exactly. Marry a sleep fan, so you're all set.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Dwayne.
Sure. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it. Yeah. You never